When I get to Mississippi, I ain't gonna call your name. When I get to Mississippi, I ain't gonna call your name. Everything I do lately seems to be in vain. I believe someone done hoodooed me. I believe someone done hoodooed me. All my friends looking funny, far as I can see. Gonna get up in the morning, hit highway. To get you off of my
Welcome to Confessing the Blues. I'm your host, Jim Ange Anderson. On today's show, we feature singer, songwriter, drummer, and percussionist Jeff Harrell. Let's roll. Okay, Jeff Harrell, welcome to the Farmhouse Studios.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, you've got a brand new record out. Can you tell me about Inipi?
Inipi is my musical purification, and that goes off the title of the record, which Inipi, which is Lakota for purification. Some people references as the Lakota Sweat Lodge, which is kind of like my culture's church, just to kind of keep it as simple as I can. But Inipi was a I had about half the tunes on the record had been I'd done demos with them, you know, in the past, and my songwriting partner Frank Rosati, who now lives out in Queens, out in New York. When he and I were in Florida, I'm going back in the early 90s, and we had done work on, let's see, Master Midnight, Smile at Me, Emotional Stranger, and Key West Morning, those four. And I had had this record, but because of that, I had had those songs in mind anyway to put on a record for a long time. But the rest of the material kind of came over, over time. To the most recent song that I wrote off of it, which was probably A Killer and His Brother. And that is the song that kind of started out as a compilation of all the criminals that I was covering, criminals and their attorneys that I was covering out in New York in the court system when I was a reporter out there. But it turned into a statement of the way of how the government has treated the American Indian in this country. And even with a little dash of the Leonard Peltier, I referenced the Leonard Peltier situation in there too. And now, long story short, it was a record that I had in my head for a long time. I've been wanting to do it. It was one of those things that kept, it was in the back of my head, like, you know, look, I'm here, we got to come out, you know.
Right.
And when my best friend and trusted soul brother, Neil Raby, died in September of 2015, still devastated over Neil's loss, but that was the catalyst that basically told me, you know, life's too short. You know, if you're going to do this, do it now.
Time to make the record.
Time to start walking the walk. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And went over to Chris Shiko's beautiful studio in his home in South Bend. And last year, spent from April till, let's see, we were done cutting tracks by September. And we mastered it and put it out, and now I'm trying to sell it and put it out to the world.
Okay, well, you mentioned a few tracks. Can you talk specifically about some of the tracks?
Yeah. Which one do you want to hear about?
Well, how about Master Midnight?
Master Midnight was a song about a pimp that I knew in Fort Lauderdale. It was a guy I used to play basketball with. Every afternoon, I belonged to this club. It was called the Courtrooms. It was like racquetball courts and basketball
mm-hmm.
court. And every afternoon, they had a bunch of guys playing, including a bunch of guys from the Miami Dolphins. I used to play with Jim Kick and Larry Zonka and Mark Clayton. And there were seven or eight of them that every day, you know, I mean, I got to really know these guys
right.
well. And, well, this guy, I forget his name. Actually, I don't even think I ever knew his name, but it was this guy who used to play, you know, play ball with us. And one night I was down on the beach and just hanging out down on the beach, and I saw him on the corner talking to, he had two of his girls out there. And I pulled out, went into this club, went into some bar on the beach, borrowed a piece of paper and a pen, and went back out there and sat, and I just started writing the lyrics down. You know, I was sitting next to the ocean, so, you know, cold wind blows in a salty midnight air, you know, and, that's how that song basically, you know, just kind of brought that song to life. Watch this guy that I knew talking to his girls on the corner.
Yeah.
So being a writer, a columnist, a journalist, you're very observant of people.
Yeah. It's kind of innate. It's in me, you know. I'm kind of a how do I put that? I'm an observer of the human condition, you know. And the darks, you know, the darker nooks and crannies, you know, out there have always held more interest to me, you know, as far as writing about and especially writing music about. I just always seem to be able to paint a picture, you know, a little bit better picture when there's something like a hooker involved or a pimp or a drug dealer.
Right.
It just seems like, and I know that this was true with Master Midnight, the words just kind of seemed to flow into me. Whatever spirit is out there is using me as a channel, you know.
Right.
Seems to do its best communication through me anyway when the, you know, when you've got these more edgier subjects that are playing out in front of me. So.
I've heard people talk about songwriting like you're just this conduit, you're this antenna, and the stuff comes to you, or sometimes it may have been germinating in your head for 20 years, and it finally kind of the puzzle comes together at one magic moment, you know?
A lot of times I would, I'll just be driving in a car and a line will come to me, you know, just some line, you know, that, I don't know, I can't think of any offhand. I guess my spirits are sleeping, but a line will come to me and I'll pull a napkin or something out and write it down. And then I collect these things. But other times, like, let's see, Master Midnight was one. Master Midnight, those words I wrote most of that song that night on
one
the bench
sitting,
just watching this guy, you know. Emotional Stranger, the second song off the tune, which I wanted to put on the back end of a, I had a whole segue in mind from Master Midnight into Emotional Stranger that I really didn't use on the record. I decided to use a conga solo, you know, go ahead and throw some of my conga chops out there and, you know, to segue into the into Emotional Stranger. But that song was about a hooker, she was like a high end call girl that lived next to me in this apartment, and beautiful girl, blonde, you know, statuesque. I mean, young. I used to see her, watch her sunbathing out by the pool every afternoon. You know, then at night, I remember three or four nights in a row, she got picked up by three or four different guys in a separately expensive sports car would drive up. I know one night a guy pulled up in a Rolls, you know, one of those Rolls like sports coupes.
Yeah,
that they had. I didn't know they had them until this guy pulls up, you know. But she just always looked like, you know, that she just carried herself just with this, like she had it all figured out, you know, and she was willing to do whatever it took, you know, with, you know, for money, you know, and she just had, you know, she was just playing with a deck of cards that, you know, your average girl wasn't able to, you know, hit the streets with.
Yeah.
And that was another song that pretty much came to me over, that was an afternoon. I remember that was an afternoon. I was sitting in my apartment. She was sunbathing out and I just started writing, writing that. And,
emotional stranger, enlightened angel, your reputation precedes you. Your danger in the manger, stranger, I see you there. No regard for those
Your clothes are flashing, your face is hard, your long legs scream your calling card. To some you're a prisoner, to others you're free. Emotional stranger, a stranger to me. Emotional stranger.
Strange.
Key West Mornings was one of the ones that the lines kind of came over time. I mean, I spent about a month, month and a half writing that song. But that was after coming back from Key West and my cousin, her husband, who was a Hell's Angel in Cleveland, and his cousin, Butch, who was so bad that, you know, that the motorcycle club stayed away from him.
They wow, that's bad.
Yeah, yeah. Butch was a bad dude.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but Butch loved me. You know, I mean, Butch treated me like family because I was, you know, married to, or I was, you know, my cousin was married to his cousin, basically. Sure. And, but we went to Key West. And Butch treated the whole time. And he had four, I remember he was walking around, you know, Key West, like, you know, where you had our Hawaiian shirts on, shorts and flip-flops and all. Here's Butch and he's all, you know, leather vest, you know,
right,
long sleeve shirt, jeans, and these boots, you know, the big biker boots, big beard, you know, long black hair, real menacing looking guy. And he was carrying $40,000 in cash in his boot. And we stayed at the Pier House. I mean, you know, he put us up, and just the whole weekend was just nothing but a playtime. And, you know, there was all sorts of illegal substances that Butch brought down for our recreational pleasure, you know.
And, right.
I didn't partake in too many of them because I never was I never really did drugs, you know, too much.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I'm not going to say I never did because there was a, you know, I was a roadie with the Allman Brothers. What the
That's
hell?
A whole nother story.
Exactly.
Right? We want to hear that later. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, but the thing is, you know, Butch never did drug one. Butch had a heart murmur that he didn't even drink. So everything he was getting in and everything he was selling was pure profit. So he was keeping everything. He had a nice house out in Plantation. Poor Butch wound up doing, I think he died in a federal prison in Kentucky. He was busted running guns. So, I mean, it was real Sons of Anarchy, you know,
yeah,
stuff.
So there's definitely stories, great stories behind most of your material.
All this, every song, I think, let's see, I would say 3/4 of the records, the songs are true. The songs are basically based on true people or some kind of a true experience. Smile at Me, for instance.
Yeah.
Smile at Me was I was down. I was broke. I mean, you know, you hit your ground. You know, everybody in life hits rock bottom somehow. There's some point in life. I don't care how much of a charmed life you've got. There's some point. You lose a parent or something really puts you to rock bottom. And I had a lot of things, including my first wife had left me. And, you know, I was playing music around Fort Lauderdale, but I was, you know, really not making too much money. I was living in a one-bedroom apartment near Fort Lauderdale Beach. And I was just really, I was between day jobs and just trying to, you know, pick myself up and trying to figure out what the hell I was going to do. And I just decided one night, I just got drunk and I started doing other stuff. And I just sat in my apartment. And I mean, I just figured out, you know what? What the hell? Why not just do all of it now?
Mm-hmm.
Just do all of it. And maybe your heart will stop beating. And I had a really good friend of mine come up to the apartment and saw me, looked in my front window and saw me in the couch. Sees a bottle of Jack Daniels and, you know, and I had some record, you know, Full Blast and all that. And he came in, he told me, I'm not going to let you kill yourself. I'm staying here with you. You can't get rid of me. And, you know, which was really, I just thought that was very, you know, it was cool that somebody thought enough of me to, you know,
To step in and
make sure I didn't. I wasn't going to do anything. I was too. I'm a chicken. Comes to that, I couldn't kill myself. You know, I'll let that time.
But you were staring at the abyss.
But I was staring. I was in a really, really dark place. I mean, to the point where I was getting mouthy with him. Like, you know, nah, man. You know, you'll be here if I want you to be here. You know, and. You know, but at the same time, you know, I was kind of thinking to myself, thank God this guy's here, you know, because I'm too stupid right now to, you know. Anyway, I wrote Smile at Me.
And that's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
It, you know, I don't necessarily, I have to listen to it again because that, I have to make that connection.
Oh. Smile at me, don't let me drown.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe because Shonda's singing it, I get a different flavor, a different feeling from it, you know.
Chandra has a way of making even the most, you know, dreadful, fear-mongering songs one of the most beautiful experiences you've ever had, you know.
Talk about Chandra.
Oh, yeah, please. I'd love to. Chandra and I have been friends for about 3 years now. I met her when I hooked up with Billy Nix and the Motown Machine. And all I can say about Chandra is, Chandra's got this God-given ability to do whatever she wants to and do it in a way that people just walk away shaking their heads just in awe. You know, I think she's got like 2 architecture degrees. She's a brilliant artist, brilliant, you know, and she knows architecture left and right. As a singer, I mean, you know, few singers out there, even the good ones, even the ones on the highest level, I mean, I've seen very few people that can take an audience and just grab them by the throat and pull them in. I've seen Chandra do that on a
captivating.
Just captivating. Yeah. And they do not take their eyes off of her. And she could tell them to go out in the yard and, you know, climb up a tree, and they would do it three or four right, times and do somersaults on the way down. You know, right. I mean, she's just got that ability to connect with people. And, I mean, and that's aside from the point that she's absolutely stunningly gorgeous.
Right.
You know, she's super intelligent. And, but when I found my real value with Chandra, I mean, not for lack of a better term, what really caught me with Chandra was when she came in the studio the first time when we were recording Junghetto's Call,
mm-hmm.
about 3 years ago, because that was a completely separate recording, for a separate session and different studio from the rest of the record. But she came in and she heard one time, and she started like laying out these ideas. Here, you know, this vocal part should go here, and you should, you know, trail off into.
She's not just a singer; she's a musician.
She has the whole. She you know, her ideas, and I mean, she can hear something, and make it better. No matter what you've got, she can hear something, and I'm not very good at listening to people, especially when I'm in the studio, right? Because I already know what I want, and this record was a very good case of that. You know, I had this record visioned.
You were focused.
I was totally focused. I was, you know, I had the segues in the middle, you know, in between the tunes. I wanted the record to be like a painting, you know, mm-hmm. rather than just a group of songs. And Chandra was able to come in. For instance, Nature's Calling, the one song that I wrote. I actually wrote Nature's Calling in about 15 minutes. That was one of the songs that I just started playing on guitar. I had the chords. I was playing the chords. Mm-hmm. I just started singing the songs and writing them down. That song really is one of the few on the record that's not about any. It's really not about any one particular person or anything. It's just these words just came to me. And I had I had originally recorded a track, a rhythm track for that I wanted to be more in the vein of like Blue Sky, the Allman Brothers, mm-hmm. you know, the Blue Sky like thing. And we still have the track for that. And I was going to sing it. And although I wrote that song with a female and Smile at Me, both the two songs that Chandra sings, I wrote both of them with a female's voice in mind. I had a female, even with Smile at Me. I'm down on the drudges. I still had, you know, I had, I don't know who I had, you know, somebody. I mean, there was a few female singers that I love out there, but I had that a female voice in mind. And Chandra came in the studio that night, and she heard that track, and she was going to sing it. And we rehearsed it, and I had the acoustic guitar, you know, and I'm playing it, and she's singing it, and she's looking at me like, you know, an angel's calling, I want to make love to you in the moonlight, and I'm just sitting there just like drowning. I'm just drowning into her eyes, you know, I'm just like, you got to kid me, but I'm playing. And she gets through playing, and I'm just like, God, I said, Chandra, that's absolutely beautiful. She goes, yeah, it is. And she says, "And we're going to do this with just me singing and you playing acoustic guitar." And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And we cut it right there.
And she had a vision.
She had a vision for that song, too. You know, and it was after we that little rehearsal. She said, Jeff, the best way to do this is just keep it simple. And I'm like, you're right. It's a simple love song. It's about the only love song I think I've ever written.
Nature's calling, I wanna make love to you in the moonlight. Nature's calling, wanna hear your call. there was no when the moon hits that glow. Both of us know, both of us know. Both of us know when the moon shines so low. Both of us know, both of us know. Nature's calling, I wanna make love to you in the moonlight. Nature's calling, shadows dancing in starlight. Nature's calling, lovers dream. Both of us know when the moon hits that glow. Both of us know, both of us know. Nature's calling, I wanna make love to you in the moonlight. Nature's calling, I wanna make love, wanna make love to you in the moonlight, to nature's calling, I wanna make love, I wanna make love to you in the moonlight. Nature's calling, we'll be right back.
you were talking earlier about as a reporter and as a sort of an observer of people writing songs and stories about people. Well, it seems that you have a song on your CD that seems to me like it's of a personal nature, and it's very blue. Bit You Crazy. Is that, can you talk about that song?
I'll talk a little bit about it. Bit You Crazy is probably my most personal song. I wrote it after I was separated this last time. I had a really real, and no, don't get me wrong. I have no regrets in my life. I don't do that. I don't expend energy on regrets. Sure. I have too much to do and too much to, you know, way too much energy to expend on things that are going to make, you know, make me a well-rounded, happy, and
sure. Accentuate the positive.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, and besides, I like where my head is now. You know, I'm at a good stage in life for me. You know, I've been through all that stuff. Well, Bit You Crazy was a culmination of all the stuff that happened in probably the worst, my most challenging, probably the worst period of my life. And I've been married 3 times. There won't be a fourth. Not that anybody knows about anyway, if it comes to that.
Right.
You know, but yeah, that, and you know what? I might not have been so direct and so, what do I want to say? There's a lot of rage in that song.
Sure. But it was the time, the way you're feeling at the time?
It was, well, I couldn't portray that song any other way because that, there was a lot of rage that went on a daily basis, that I was dealing with for almost, 14 years. You know, and the one thing that I'm always very, very concentrated with, no matter what I write, I want to be honest. Honesty is my number one mission in life. You know, I think is the reason why I had a lot of fans as a news reporter, because they knew they could trust me.
Straight shooter, they're getting the real deal.
Exactly. Yeah. They're getting honest. They're getting the honest, accurate facts. You know, and now when I was able to write my column, you know, then I was able to put my, you know, really flare it up and throw my 2 cents in and get my take on it too, which is the job of a columnist. You know, but with that song, I don't think I could have written that song any other way. Now, when I recorded that song with the Moore Brothers, and I had a long talk with the engineer, who was telling me, "Don't you think Bitch is a little harsh? And don't you think you're going to be turning off a segment of your listeners who may be offended, namely the female,
right,
you know, aspect of the population?" And at the time, I told him, I said, first of all, this, you know, I know chicks who call their boyfriends bitch, you know. Bitch, get out of here.
Right.
You know, I mean, bitch is kind of a intra-gender word. Is that a...
I'm going to go with it.
It kind of transcends, you know, that word is kind of transcends gender. It doesn't necessarily mean, you know, your
female dog.
A female dog anymore. It could mean a male dog, too.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, a male dog who's not exactly, you know, living up to his, you know, expectations. But I told him, I go, you know what, you may be right. And I said, we could cut down, you know, I said, you crazy. He says, listen, that song is so powerful. Anyway, he said, I think if you cut out the word, I really believe that you'll have a lot of people, everybody will rally around and everybody can relate to it. So we recorded it like that, and it was great. I mean, it was great. Tom and Dave both did an amazing job with it, you know, but they're blues men anyway. I mean, they're tried and true blues men. So they get it, you know, so we turned that song into, you know, really, I was very satisfied with it, just going out with You Crazy. Well, before I was doing this record, I was playing Chandra. I was playing some of the tunes for Chandra, some of the demos. And I told her that story. Chandra's like, what? No. I said, man, you know, it's bitch you crazy, man. Right. I know women that, you know, sure, turn to their, you know, their guys. And man, bitch, get out of here, you know. I said, I could see the bitch you crazy tour. Right. And she said, you know, that song is powerful. And is that the way you wrote it? I go, yeah, that's the way I wrote it. She said, well, then that's the way you're going to record it.
Sure. And as an artist, you have to think about your feelings and what you're processing. It's not always about your demographics. And right?
Yeah. Those were my true feelings on that song. Yeah. You know, and every word in that is true, including the jail cell. Yeah, I got 30. Yeah, she had me put in a jail cell, you know, and I didn't even lay a hand on her.
All right.
It was one of those, you know, but again, it was something. And listen, and I'm going to say this too, you know, and I really don't want to get, and for future reference, you know, I know if anybody wants to interview me again, who knows, you know. I'm not going to speak about my marriage. I'm not. It's in the past. I don't want to revisit it, to be honest with you. I mean, and the reason why I wrote the song the way I did was so I would not have to revisit it anymore on my own, and I could, if somebody wanted to find out about it, just listen to the song, listen to the words, and you'll get the story.
And there's something cathartic and healing about the process of recording it, of singing it, just getting out of your system.
I've been able to say, just kind of store those feelings on the, you know, in the back of my, you know, in the back of my head until I need them. And then I can put it out there, you know, when I'm in front of an audience and I'm singing that song, then I can really throw some anger into it and channel that anger into my art instead of carrying with me on a day-to-day basis and treating people who had nothing to do with that period with, you know, with anger and hostility, you know, over something that's been lingering in me. This is another way for me to address that. And believe me, I had a lot. It took me a long time to get my head back after that experience.
Well, what do you say we make some music?
Let's do it. Lord have mercy, Lord have mercy. Could rob the soul out of me. Stone cold out of your mind. For thinking I'm some old tired used to be. No, no, no. Silver, you robbed me out of my gold, you robbed me out of my children, you robbed me out of my happy home, you robbed me of my dog, you robbed me of my cat, you robbed me everything, down to the flaps on my Cadillac. But you crazy? For thinking you could rob the soul out of me. You crazy? For thinking you could rob the soul out of me. I'm some old tired used to be. No, no, no. Crazy, crazy, crazy. Silver, you beat me out of my gold, you beat your own damn kids, you beat me out of my miserable home, you beat me like my dog, you beat the streets like my cat, you beat me into a jail cell, you beat me into a national stand. But you crazy? For thinking you could beat the soul out of me. Bitch, you crazy? For thinking you could beat the soul out of me. Stone cold out of your mind. For thinking I'm some old tired used to be. Oh, bitch, you crazy. Bitch, you crazy. You crazy.
She really crazy.